Hello and welcome to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio. I'm Darren Hefty.
And I'm Brian Hefty. Thanks for joining us today. Today on the show, we're going to talk a little about post-emerge broadleaf herbicides in wheat, but we are also going to take your calls and questions all throughout the show. If you would like to give us a call, the number here is 844-44-AG-PHD. Again, that's 844-442-4743. You could also email us, radio@agphd.com, or send us a note on X, Ag PhD Media, Darren Hefty, or Brian Hefty. All right, so just a couple of things to start out. When we talk about broadleaf herbicides in wheat, then we're going to get to the Ag PhD mailbag. But number one, I'm going to assume 20, 30 years ago on your farm, 2,4-D was the most common thing. Now look, number one, 2,4-D volatilizes, drifts all over the place. I don't like it. Unless you go with the new 2,4-D. So new 2,4-D Freelix, we don't have that issue, at least with volatility. So that's really nice. Just like in Enlist crops, Enlist 1 is basically the same thing as Freelix, only Enlist 1 has a little bit more drift retardant to it. But the other side of this is crop injury. You know, when Darren and I were growing up on the farm, we didn't have a lot of herbicide options. Now, of course, that was a really long time ago. But the point is, today we have much better, safer options. So our advice is almost always, please don't use 2,4-D on your wheat. It's just really hard on the wheat. Now, there are alternatives. So, for example, if let's say you went white R-match, well, that's got the active ingredient from Elevore that's in there along with white match. And Elevore is basically a 2,4-D replacement product. Same mode of action, but it doesn't volatilize. It doesn't hurt the wheat like old 2,4-D. So I really like that. Now you can go with something completely different too, like let's say it's Husky FX. Starane, well, that is actually the same mode of action as what 2,4-D would be its group for. Doesn't hurt the wheat, really good on kochia. But then you've also got Bucktril in there and an HPPD. So Husky FX, fantastic product. We love that. And you're going to see Corteva basically trying to somewhat go away from wide R match in certain situations too, to have similar chemistry to what Husky is. So anyway, there are certainly going to be more options as we move forward, but we got some pretty good choices today. Anyway, we'll talk about post-emerge broadleaf herbicides in wheat more throughout the show, but right now, let's get to the Ag PhD mailbag.
It's the mailbag!
All right. Yeah, lots of questions coming in. Okay, first one comes in from HB. How do you mitigate acidification when applying nitrogen at 6 inches? Lime really doesn't seem to leach down, or at least that's what I believe.
Well, lime actually can move down, but here's the whole thing. We talk about this pretty often on the show. If you're going to no-till, then you have to be planning further ahead with everything, because tillage makes your changes very quick. For example, if you were to put lime out there and you till it in down to 6 inches deep, well, if you had acidity down at 6 inches deep, well, now you got lime down there. Now, granted, lime isn't going to change acidity overnight. It usually takes time, anywhere from 6 months to maybe 3 years, all dependent on your rainfall and how fine that lime is and heat and a number of other factors. But anyway, my point here is I'm not too worried about the acidification down at 6 inches as long as it's relatively minor. If it's 4, yes, you got a major problem. And I'm probably going to advise you, you know what? Either you plant some crop that loves low pH or you're going to have to do some tillage. And this is exactly the reason why I say you got to kind of stay ahead of this if you want to be in no-till. But we have found great success with lime working its way down in the ground. Eventually, it will get down there. It just takes some time.
All right. I got this question that came in from Bert, who said, talk about tillage, moving fertility down in the soil, and the speed of equipment. I'm wondering, does speed make any difference in how far the herbicide gets down? And what do you normally recommend when you're doing tillage? How far does that move fertility down?
Well, when you stop and think about it for just a second, and undoubtedly for you on your farm, you've done tillage and you have watched what happens when you do tillage. Well, what happens when you go faster? Number one, it's probably harder to stay deep. Now, we actually like that when we're tilling in herbicides because for the most part, we want them lightly tilled in. If you got something like your radicane or treflan that becomes a gas in the soil, then it's different. Then I don't have a big problem if you get it down in the ground a little ways. But for almost everything else, almost any herbicide used on the farm today, we want shallow incorporation. I want the herbicide down an inch, maybe two, which means you can till down to 2 to 4 inches deep. The faster you run, the harder it is going to be to get deep, and I want that. Okay, the other side of this is, as far as tillage speed, what happens when you till faster? Stuff goes flying all over the place. So honestly, I would say you have less chance of it going deep when you go fast because of that as well. So anyway, I guess go fast when you're doing tillage for incorporating herbicides. And the other tip, and we've talked about this a couple times already this spring, put extensions on your sweeps or shanks where your wheel tracks are. That way you can run the rest of the machine shallow. You don't have to run the whole machine down just so you cover your wheel tracks. That's a good tip, something that our dad taught us when we were young. And man, that just makes life a whole lot easier.
All right. Thanks for the question. This one came in from Fester, who said, you talked about applying nitrogen to peat soil, and you said, do the $5 cheap nitrate tests. Who makes these tests? Are they a dipstick, and are they reliable?
We send our samples into Midwest Labs. Yeah, they cost just over $5 a sample. I'm sure there are other labs that would be similarly priced, so just call around. As far as the on-farm testing, I can't tell you there's anything that's fantastically accurate yet, but we continue to test that, and I have great optimism for the future. Stay tuned. We're going to talk post-emerge broadleaf herbicides in wheat right after this.
Warning, high yields incoming. Upgrading your planter with Germinator closing wheels can increase your corn yields by 13 bushels in no-till and 7 bushels in conventional. Are your bins ready? Call Farm Shop MFG at 712-520-6051.
Tame tough weeds with a pre-plant application of Revitan, a powerful burn-down herbicide. Revitan drops the hammer on more than 50 species of tough weeds with great tank mix compatibility and low use rates. Learn more at helmcrop.com/Revitan. Always read and follow label directions.
Weeds rob you of yield potential, so rob them of the chance to grow with powerful corn herbicide solutions from Corteva Agriscience. Weeds won't know what hit them, but you will, because you can count on proven top herbicides like Resicor or SureStart 2 or the new game-changing herbicide Cairo to effectively control weeds. That way, you spend less time worrying about unwanted yield-robbing weeds and have more time to power on with your day. Learn more at PowerOverWeeds.com.
When it comes to fungal diseases like soybean white mold and STS, you know how devastating yield loss can be. That's why you work with your seed dealer to find the best genetics for your farm. Did you know you can bring forward the defensive traits of those genetics with a seed treatment? Heads up, a biological plant activator primes your seed to turn on its natural defense against disease. This spring, take your yields to the finish line. Ask your seed dealer for a Heads Up seed treatment.
Nothing but net. Win your soybean season with the fast knockdown and lasting broad-spectrum control of Elevest Insect Control from FMC. Take on armyworms, stink bugs, soybean loopers, and more with the maximized ratio of premier active ingredients for better overall control of more than 40 labeled pests. Visit your FMC retailer or elevest.ag.fmc.com to up your game this season. Always read and follow all label directions.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today, talking about post-emerge broadleaf herbicides in wheat. And you'll notice some of the active ingredients we talk about here get used in multiple crops. So pay attention to some of the tricks here and tips that you hear about, okay, here's how I get the most activity out of those products, and also some of the weeds that they'll take out for you. Also, some of the strategies here, because in wheat, a lot of farmers say, well, I'm just going to wait, see what comes up, and then I'll go after it. But there are some alternatives now with pre-emerge herbicides, and the pre-emerge herbicide use is growing across the country. I've got Ryan Hunt with us right now with FMC to talk about post-emerge broadleaf herbicides in wheat. But Ryan, I would argue, kind of like in soybeans, if you can do a pre, that can take a lot of those weeds out of the way for you. You don't have to fight them post.
Yeah, that's definitely a route that is worth taking, and it's a great way to get ahead of things and just have less flexion pressure later on your post as well.
All right, talk to us about these pre's just real quick before we get into the post, because some of them, the timing's a little bit different. So talk specifically about your product and when you want to see that applied.
Yeah, so I guess if we're talking residual-wise, it'd be Anthem Flex. And now with that, what we want to do is we need to have about a quarter of an inch of germination on that seed. If we have it out there ahead of time, we get a big rain, it gets down into that seed zone when it is germinating, we'll see a little injury. So we just need a little, we call it a delayed pre. So once it starts to shoot that little germination off, we're good to go, put it out there, get it activated, and, get some real good residual into the season on your tough-to-kill grasses like green foxtail, yellow foxtail, barnyard grass, and your pigweeds and stuff like that as well. The other thing we would have would be Panaflex, which is a SU product that's going to be a really good burn down. Sprayed anytime out there pre for your wheat. Really going to be good on dandelions and winter annuals, those sort of weeds.
Yeah, that is a real challenge because they've been growing for a while and they've got a pretty decent root system underneath them, even if the plant above ground isn't huge yet. So they can be tricky, and a lot of times we need a little extra help, especially when we're mixing with something like Roundup that when it's cooler, it's not doesn't work the best sometimes. All right, post-emerge, we've got a lot of different choices. There's quite a few things out there, and we've got options for just about every weed, it seems like. For me, it's the timing, Ryan. I like to time it based on, well, how big are those weeds and hit them when they're really small. I know there's growth stage limits on a lot of the products, but what do you recommend? Are you watching the calendar? Or are you just watching weed height? Are you watching crop height? Or don't take the easy route and say all of them.
For me, the biggest thing is watching the crop stage, just so we don't get too big and cause any injury. That's probably what most of us will tell you, but you don't want those weeds to get away from you either. So, if you're using one of our affinity brands or Express, you're pretty well good to go out there from anywhere to that, one or two leaf stage up to that full tillering, even past that. A lot of your other brands that you'll be tank mixing with, a lot of times around that tillering is when they're cut off or when most people are, 4 to 6 leaves seems to be a good shot in there. The weeds usually haven't got away from you if things, if you got a good burn down. So that's kind of really the target, I would say. You're still early. You can get good coverage on the weeds. The crop isn't really taken over either there. So when we throw that affinity in there for our Canada thistles and pigweeds and other winter annuals and things, that's really good timing. Tanks mix is real great with your other products too.
Yeah, low use rates and pretty easy on the crop. That's a couple of things I look for too. If we can find things that don't slow that crop down, because ultimately crop canopy is what's going to keep us clean throughout the rest of the year. If we can keep those weeds out early, we allow that stand to be thicker and all good things going into the season. Talking with Ryan Hunt here, he works with FMC. Ryan, thank you so much. We really appreciate having you on today.
Yep, thank you.
Send out to Colorado. We got Mark with us right now, farms out there with his family. How you doing, Mark?
Good. How are you today?
We're doing quite well. And one of the reasons why is we're talking post-emerge broadleaf herbicides and wheat, and we got a lot of choices. And I like that. Whenever there's more than just one or two choices, it seems like we can find a mix that works for about everything. Are you having good luck with broadleaf control in wheat, or are there still a few weeds that are tougher to control than others?
Certainly on the broadleaf side, we're having pretty good luck controlling a lot of our weeds. We still have some issues with some of the winter annuals. you know, some of the mustards, the tansy mustard, the musk mustard. We run into some issues with that, but for the most part, we're able to control our broadleaves really well, including kochia.
Yeah, kochia is one that we hear a lot of guys worried about. Man, if we lose starane, we're going to be in trouble. That's a real key active out there. But are you finding some other things that are helping on it too, or are you just saying, no, starane's the way to go and it's still working great?
No, I'm very much in the starane camp. That's been probably one of the better herbicides that's come into the cereal market, certainly in my farming career. Kochia is very much our number one weed issue here. And kind of like your previous speaker there, timing is everything. And making sure that we get out there early when the weeds are small, that's been probably the biggest thing we've done to control our kochia pressures moving forward.
How about crop rotation, Mark? I know you guys end up doing a bunch of different crops, obviously depending on the economics and the soil and everything else. But do you find crop rotation being a real key there as well?
On our irrigated acres, we do. Yes, being able to rotate and have some flexibility, especially if we have a legume in the rotation or something like that, we want a lot of flexibility. You know, a sugar beet, something like that. On the dry land, we don't see as much of an issue there in terms of rotation because our cereals are typically a wheat, a barley, and then occasionally we'll have a milo or a dry land corn in that rotation as well.
Yeah, you're right. The irrigated to dry land does make a big difference for you as to which crops you're going to be putting out there to begin with. Well, what is this year shaping up for you? What's your moisture situation?
You know, our moisture is okay. We actually had a little bit of a rain shower come through this morning, which was kind of unique, but now we've got a 50-mile-an-hour sustained wind blowing out here. So I think everything we put in this morning is coming back out. On our farm, the things that we're facing right now is we had a lot of our winter wheat that was seeded late last fall just emerged this spring. So we're a little bit behind in terms of stage. Our wheat's now just starting to head into a very early tiller, which we would like to have a lot of that done going into dormancy, frankly. But we're okay. We're certainly a lot better than we were in 2022. And I don't know that we can count on the kinds of rains that we had in 2023, but all things said and done, we're in actually pretty decent shape for the moment.
Hey, you mentioned that winter wheat being behind like that. We had a pretty mild winter. Was it lack of moisture? Was it just planting date, or what influenced the wheat coming so slow?
You know, it was really lack of moisture last fall. Some of our friends and neighbors went out in the field and started drilling that first week of September, and a lot of those stands came up at the same time as ours that was planted, the last week of October, the first week of November. We just didn't have any kind of moisture going into last fall. We had a few good snows, some timely snows in the month of December and certainly in January. And then, kind of like you said before, our February was incredibly mild, which allowed this crop to come up earlier than it typically would have been in the high plains here of eastern Colorado, given a kind of an average year. But I'm pleased with what I see so far. Planting that late, we had to certainly bump our population significantly, and I'm glad that we did that.
Yeah, you just have to adjust every year. And like you mentioned, it's not as bad as just a couple years ago. At least we still remember that in our minds. It kind of keeps us a little more positive that, well, it could be worse. And also you made some adjustments there to still get a decent stand. I think that stand establishment is just so key for keeping these weeds out. The crop canopy ends up being the big deal throughout the season for sure. Hey, Mark, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on. Good luck to you guys this spring. Hopefully the moisture situation improves.
Yeah, thank you very much. Best of luck to you this spring.
You bet. Talking about post-emerge broadleaf herbicides in wheat. And we talked a little bit to start the show off about some of the pre-emerge residual options. If you're still going to seed some wheat, strongly would recommend that. If you've got big-time broadleaf problems, I know Ryan Hunt had mentioned Anthem Flex. That's a good option. A couple ounces of Sharpen is really good on broadleaves as well, both from a burn-down standpoint, but also from residual. We'll talk more about broadleaves and wheat coming up after this.
Officer Jones calling for backup.
10-4. Location?
Graber back 40. Looks like we've got Palmer amaranth, kochia, some common water hemp.
Resistant weeds. Copy that. You'll need a good tank mix partner. I'm sending Tough 5EC.
Come out with your hands up!
Guys, we're surrounded.
Crack down on repeat offenders. Add Tough 5EC to your post-emergence tank mix. Learn more at toughonweeds.com. Always read and follow label directions. Tough is a registered trademark of Belgium Crop Protection.
Get uniform control in your fields with trusted, hard-working Lucento fungicide. Control the toughest diseases with a dual mode of action fungicide that consistently outperforms the competition in field trials. Lucento fungicide from FMC works overtime for lasting control to help improve crop yields. Talk about getting the job done. Visit your FMC retailer or lucento.ag.fmc.com for hardworking control in your fields. Always read and follow all label directions.
Maverick Corn Herbicide from Valent USA has proven to be a key part of growers' success in fighting problematic weeds. But don't take it from us. Take it from agronomy manager Nate Honeck.
We've seen tremendous weed control that was sprayed in dry, hot conditions with very little rain within 2 weeks after application. Very easy application. Definitely tank mix well with the various products we used.
Visit Valent.com/Maverick to learn more about Maverick Corn Herbicide. Always read and follow label instructions.
Every season, you're collecting yield data on virtually every acre of your farm. But what good is your data if you never use it? Put it to work with Verify. Verify takes yield data directly from your combine and instantly generates variable rate fertility maps based on crop removal, ensuring your crops get what they need, right where they need it, no matter what equipment you run. Go to verify.com to find an expert to help you get started. That's VRAFY.com.
Because the challenges you face are getting bigger every year, BASF is committed to helping with more than boots on the ground. We're committed to boots in the mud, boots on the steps of your truck, your tractor, your combine, the linoleum tiles of your coffee shop, the concrete of your co-op, the gravel in your shed. So we can listen, learn firsthand, help right now to ensure success. BASF, helping you do the biggest job on earth.
It's smart to make the right agronomic choices, and it's even smarter to get rewarded for them. With the Bayer Plus Rewards program, you earn cash back on seed, herbicides, and other eligible products. And it keeps getting smarter, because now you can earn an additional 10% bonus when you send your redemption check to your retailer. To learn more, contact your retailer today. Protect your yields and get the most from your land with Bayer Plus Rewards. Visit mybayerplus.com and see program terms and conditions for full details.
Welcome back to Ag PhD Radio. Brian Hefty here, along with my brother Darren. We're live in the Morton studio, and today on the show we've been talking about post-emerge broadleaf herbicides in wheat. When we started the show, I just brought up Wide R Match, Husky FX, talked a little about those chemistries and some new chemistry that Corteva is going to come with that's similar to Husky. So just to step back for a second here, if you go back years ago, yeah, we had 2,4-D. I said I'm not a big fan of that. But when Buctrol came out, that was good in our area. It doesn't kill lots of broadleaf weeds, but it does kill some. It's good on cocklebur and sunflower and mustard and things like that. So it's not too bad. And it certainly can help on a number of other broadleaf weeds as well, whether it's lamb's quarters, helps a little bit on kochia. Anyway, with Husky, what that's got is it's got the active ingredient from Buctrol and then an HPPD. And an HPPD would be something like Callisto, for example, that you would be familiar with in corn. So it's not Callisto that's in there. It's not mesotrione, but it's something in that same chemical family. Turns weeds white, and that's what it does. Has some residual. Anyway, we have really liked Husky over the years. Don't see a lot of, we don't see any volatility. We don't see a lot of drift issues, but certainly there could be some carryover concern with certain crops. So not a big deal if you're going to corn or beans, corn or soybeans, I should say, but with some other crops, you have to be a little bit worried. But it's the same kind of thing with Wide Match. I mean, for most crops, not a big concern, but there is Stinger in there that does have a lot of residual. So Wide Match is the combination of Stinger and Starane. Well, Starane doesn't have residual. It's a great kochia product. Stinger's a fantastic thistle product. It is great. It'll kill that thistle, roots and all, if you have the right rate. Problem is, if you bump the rate on Stinger, or wide match either way. So you get more stinger out there. That's when you have to start worrying about carryover, especially in dry years, especially in cold environments. And we've kind of had some of that problem in the past ourselves. Well, I just say this. When you think about herbicide breakdown, so let's just set this wheat conversation aside for just a second here. I want to talk about the carryover thing that I alluded to here. With herbicide breakdown, if you have lots of weeds, you will not find as much herbicide left over, which makes complete sense, right? So if you have so many weeds that your herbicide can barely kill them all, well, there's not going to be a lot of herbicide left. The other things we're always after, you hear a lot about rainfall. Okay, that's a part of it. Heat is probably an even bigger part, though, than the rainfall. But ultimately, what are we talking about here? It's microbial breakdown of the herbicide. So if you have heat, you have ample moisture, those are good things. But I just want you to think about what are the bad things that could impact microbes. Well, obviously, if the ground's frozen, the microbes aren't active. If you have flooding, now you may kill the microbes, and now you might not have that herbicide breakdown. So that's where too much water actually could be a detriment, because there are a lot of these herbicides, they don't move well in the soil. They don't leach out like atrazine does. They're going to stay there, so you have to break them down with microbes. But here's one other thing you may have never thought about. Salt. I ran into the situation, I don't know, 20, 25 years ago, and I was working with a group of farmers where they had stinger, and they were having a carryover problem. And I'm like, what? Carryover at the rate you're using? I don't know. I can't believe it, I said. Well, we started digging into it a little bit more, and for these guys, they had put on so much manure over the years. It was crazy. Well, what they had done is overloaded their ground with salt. Salt in excess kills. So what had happened is the salt was killing the microbes, and they just didn't have good microbial breakdown and had lots of carryover. So if you don't have ideal soil conditions, you are more prone to have carryover. So this also goes back to, you know, a lot of times here at Ag PhD, people will say, oh, you guys just want to solve all the problems with herbicides or insecticides or whatever. And I'm always going, well, those are tools. But let's not forget all the other tools. We have all these cultural practices that we can use that can make everything better on the farm. So if you want less carryover, your cultural practices have great soil. That means great drainage. Build your soil organic matter. Have good levels and balanced levels of all nutrients out there, not just N, P, and K, but you got to really look at zinc. That's key for microbial activity. And there are others too. So don't just say, well, I just used this herbicide and I used it everywhere and I don't know why I have this problem over in this one field and everywhere else, it's fine, no carryover. You can go back to how healthy is that soil. Okay, so anyway, to finish up on the wheat broadleaf conversation, we loved Wide Match and Husky. Those are great. But now we have better products. There's Wide R Match. That basically adds the active ingredient from Elevore to Wide Match. It's a much improved version of Wide Match because now we have a 2,4-D replacement product. So you don't have to throw 2,4-D in with the Wide Match. Now you have something else in there in this Wide R Match that gives you better control, doesn't hurt the wheat, doesn't cost much more. Husky FX, same kind of improvement over the old Husky. Husky FX basically adds the active ingredient from Starane, so now you have even better kochia control, so we love that. I would also say if you want to use some of the old ALS chemistries like Affinity Broad Spec, Affinity Tank Mix, you can certainly do that. There are a lot of people that use those yet, but those are in the ALS chemical family, and so you're not going to control ALS-resistant weeds. Unfortunately, kochia and water hemp fall into that category, and so do a bunch of others. So those are our main products that we will typically talk about. Yes, there are others, but those are the primary ones that we're going to discuss with most farmers. And I would also say one last thing. When you throw a grass herbicide with any of these broadleaf killers, you will have antagonism. The grass herbicide won't work as well. And I know there are combination products out there, premixes. There's Axial Star, there's Gold Sky, Open Sky, Perfect Match, Resivant, Husky Complete. They all have grass killers in there. What I'm trying to tell you here is if you have an absolute disaster for grass, we're going to suggest two things. Number one, use a pre-emerge herbicide. That will help you a lot. Use Zidua or Anthem Flex, or you could use Prepare. Do something pre, okay? Post-emerge, you can spray the grass herbicide by itself. If you do that a week or two before you're going to spray the broadleaf herbicide, that'd be amazing. Even if it's just a few days before the broadleaf herbicide, that would be great. Always spray the grass killer first. Don't flip it around, because a lot of these broadleaf products have some activity on grass. They weaken the grass. So if you spray the broadleaf herbicide first and you come back with your grass herbicide a week later or something, the grass herbicide doesn't work great. We want that grass control to be amazing, because grass is usually the biggest yield robber in small grain crops. So spray the grass herbicide first by itself if you have a disaster. So sure, if you only have a little bit of grass out there, no big deal. Use these premixes. They're fine. Everything's okay. But if you got a disaster field, split it up. You'll have better results. Okay, let's get back to the Ag PhD mailbag.
All right, this one comes from Nicole. She said, I'd like some info on fighting hemp nettle. Oh, sure. Pick the easy ones, Nicole, for us. It is an annual weed, but it's a tough one to control. It looks like mint. It's got those square stems, but it gets a little bit taller. It can get up to about 3 feet tall. A lot of areas consider it a noxious weed, but some areas call it a desirable wildflower. And here's where we really fight. Don't spread those wildflowers, because they can really move out into a field. It does like fertile and wet soil, so if you've got really good drainage, that can help you. But it is showing some resistance to ALS herbicides in some areas, and even some potential group 4 resistance. What I like the best, of course, is Roundup. If you can use Roundup, it works great. We were just talking about wheat herbicides on today's program. Husky FX is really good. It's got three different active ingredients in there, and that really works well. In soybeans, I like it if you can plant Enlist soybeans or Xtend Flex soybeans, because then you've got Roundup, Liberty, and either the 2,4-D or dicamba option there. There are some good choices, depends on where you're at. And if you're in a non-crop area and you've got grass that you don't want to hurt, you could use something like just straight 2,4-D. But the trick is to use a strong enough rate of either 2,4-D or dicamba to knock it out. Hey, thanks for the question, Nicole. We really appreciate it. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Are you ready for better efficiency, more productivity, higher yields? Then you're ready for John Deere Precision Technology, which starts with three core pieces. First, a G5 display gives fast views of your work and a window to future technology. A Starfire receiver gives you sub-inch repeatable accuracy without an RTK base station. And a JD Link modem gives you a live view of your entire operation. Get precise and talk with your John Deere dealer, or visit johndeere.com/Facebook.
It's smart to make the right agronomic choices, and it's even smarter to get rewarded for them. With the Bayer Plus Rewards program, you earn cash back on seed, herbicides, and other eligible products. And it keeps getting smarter, because now you can earn an additional 10% bonus when you send your redemption check to your retailer. To learn more, contact your retailer today. Protect your yields and get the most from your land with Bayer Plus Rewards. Visit MyBayerPlus.com and see program terms and conditions for full details.
Maverick Corn Herbicide from Valent USA has proven to be a key part of growers' success in fighting problematic weeds. But don't take it from us. Take it from farmer Rob Schaefer.
Residuals have become a big part of our chemical programs, with trying to battle water hemp, and also mare's tail is our big one. It's done a real good job of controlling those. You don't have to, you know, put a bunch of gallons in your sprayer, cover a lot of acres that way.
Visit Valent.com/Maverick to learn more about Maverick Corn Herbicide. Always read and follow label instructions.
Your farm's greatest challenge is making sure your crop has enough fertility to reach its yield goals. But how do you know if you're applying too much of any one nutrient? Fine-tune your fertility plan with Verify. Your combine collects hundreds of yield data points per acre. Verify takes that data and instantly generates variable rate fertility maps based on crop removal, so you can be confident you're not over-applying. Get started today at verify.com. That's VRAFY.com.
Morton Buildings has served the American farmer for more than 120 years. From manufacturing our own building components to constructing your building, Morton takes pride in being the industry leader in post-frame construction by providing a quality building and exceptional customer service. A Morton is built to last for generations. To get started on your next project, please visit MortonBuildings.com.
The hard-working, independent spirit of rural America can often be isolating. It's not often discussed, but mental health issues are real. Now's the time to lead by example, talk openly, and show that a strong mind is just as important as a strong body. FMC is proud to be working toward ending the misconceptions around mental health through awareness, guidance, and action. Together, we can uproot the stigma.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, right in the middle of the Ag PhD mailbag time, taking your calls and agronomic questions at 844-44-AG-PHD, or you can always send us an email, radio@agphd.com. I get this question in. You guys were talking about pulling nitrate tests in season, and here's the question. What about ammonium nitrogen?
Yeah, so when we have tested that before, and just from everything we've read on that too, usually those levels are very low. So it's not a big deal. Just test your nitrate, and you should be in good shape.
Right. Dennis sent in a question. He said, hey, guys, you were talking about gibberellic acid on your television program. Could you tell me that chemical formula again? The formula stayed on screen for such a short time, I didn't get it all down. Well, gibberellic acid, the formula is C19H22O6. So carbon 19, hydrogen 22, oxygen 6 for gibberellic acid. Hey, thanks, Dennis. We appreciate you watching the show, and thanks for the question today. This one's from Jared, another nitrogen question. How much UAN do you lose if you broadcast it on and you don't get a rain?
Well, it's much better than urea, let's put it that way, but you're going to start losing it. Here's the problem. We don't know exactly how much because there are a lot of factors that go into this, the enzymes in the soil, the heat, wind, sun, and then when does that rain come exactly? Now, the other side of it is, let's say that you're doing this in season. Well, is the ground shaded? Are you getting some dew off the leaves? Like, let's say you Y drop. That's one of the things they talk about quite often there, that maybe by some miracle, some of the dew could move stuff down to the ground. Now, I question that, but whatever. So you see my point. There's no exact thing. Just know this. If you lay nitrogen on the soil surface, you're at risk. So if you say, hey, I'm in a drier area, no rain in the forecast. Like on our farm, when we run into that, you know what we do? We inject it. We use a machine that has coulters. We put it down on the ground. Then we know we're good. Otherwise, if you're going to lay it on the soil surface, use a nitrogen stabilizer. At least that'll help.
All right. Thanks for the question. I get this one from GN. You guys were talking about how much an ear of corn is worth. Wow. That means transportation and the middlemen account for about 1,000% markup. That's unreal.
Well, I guess I don't know what exactly he's referring to, but like food processors. So yeah, if you add corn that somehow ended up into food, a lot of the corn that we raise though on the farm, that goes to livestock.
Yep, livestock or ethanol.
Yep.
Yeah, or ethanol and then
ethanol,
the part
and
that
then
they don't
livestock.
Take out and they give to the livestock. Yes.
Yep, you're right.
All right. This one comes from Power Ram. I like that. Why don't you put gravel and fabric down like you do with a French drain when you're putting in tile? I'm wondering, does the dirt clog the pipe since it doesn't have protection from the fabric and the gravel to filter out?
Well, if you were to do it that way, you would find that you wouldn't have as consistent of slope because now you had to dig down at the bottom, and your cost would probably be, I'm guessing here, at least 2x. So like on our farm, I don't know how much we spent on tile, $500,000. Was I really going to spend another $500,000 to put that down? I don't I mean, the tile works great for us. So here are a couple things. So a lot of tile lines, if you're putting them into a good clay soil, then we expect those to last 50 to 100 years. I mean, could I make it last longer, the method you're talking about? Probably, but I mean, I'm 55 years old already. If it makes it another 50 years, I'll be 105. I think I'm good. Our dad would often say, guys, no matter what you do, all tile lines eventually are going to fill in. Even if you do, with your method there, you protect it as much as you think you can, there's still always dirt that's moving around in the soil. And unless you have lots of slope, eventually there are going to be places where a little bit of dirt catches, a root gets in there, things happen, and your tile line plugs up. So yes, with your method, you could probably increase the longevity and performance of that tile line a little bit, but it's way cheaper to just upsize your line a little bit. So instead of running 3-inch lateral lines, we run 4-inch, for example. Didn't cost much more, and then we're in real good shape for a long time. Plus, we have more capacity, at least in the first few years, until everything would maybe start to plug up 20, 30, 40 years from now. But yeah, everybody's in a little bit different situation. So if it was, if we had lots of concerns depending on that soil type, we may make some modifications. For example, if you have fine sand or silt, what we'll do is put a sock around the tile, or you can run with narrow slot tile. So there certainly are options out there other than having to dig everything in, put rock there, fabric, all this other stuff.
All right. High pH. Had a few questions come in. We were talking about high pH. This one comes in from Donnie Boy. He says, well, is the high pH in your soil caused because it is full of excess carbon from acid rain?
If there was acid rain, then that would drive the pH down. So that's not going to be the case.
No, and excess carbon is not going to increase the soil pH either.
No.
Okay. Is this one, GNK, in my soil, high pH is caused by it being from a high percentage of calcium carbonate. It's partly limestone out there. Yeah, we do see excess lime in the soil.
Yep, raising could raise pH. Yep, absolutely.
Okay. Tyson says, what about in areas like Utah where even the water is high pH because of all the limestone in our area?
What about it? You mean how do we fix it?
Is that causing the high pH in your soil? Certainly in irrigation, yes, if you're irrigating with high pH water, that is going to lead to more issues with high pH.
No, yeah, now let's keep in mind, if there is excess calcium for each of the last two questions that came in, we can flush that out. We want to look at, do we have great drainage? Do we have does the ground need to be tiled? Do we have tile out there? And should we be putting more sulfur out there to flush out excesses? Those are just some things that you could consider trying to get your percentage right. And then the other side of it is we just want to have good balance in the soil. So if, let's say, there is a lot of calcium, do you need some magnesium? Do you need some more potassium? And like I said already, do you need some sulfur? I mean, you start getting things in balance, and then usually pH starts to moderate.
All right. Got a question here from Just Go, who says, what's the ratio of nitrogen used to break down the organic material, I'm assuming, for release?
We talk often about high carbon to nitrogen residue fields. So let's say it's wheat or corn and you're 60 to 1, 80 to 1, or greater than that. Yeah, you're going to have tie up of nitrogen because the microbes are using the nitrogen for food. So a lot of times what we've said over the years is 16 to 1 is kind of the ratio you need to get below. Darren, I think we were talking before this, 24 to 1
24 to 1. They say microorganisms have an 8 to 1 carbon to nitrogen ratio and they need a diet of 24 to 1 carbon to nitrogen material, and they can break that down readily. And apparently they use, and this is way beyond me, but they use 16 units of carbon for energy and 8 units for maintenance. And then, of course, if you've got something less than a 24 to 1 carbon to nitrogen ratio, they can break that down really quickly, and there's going to be some excess nitrogen that's left for your crop.
Yeah, it's just what I had always heard and read was 16 to 1 or somewhere in that ballpark. But, I mean, whatever, 16 to 1, 24 to 1, relatively close.
Yeah, much it's better than the 60-to-1 cornstalk residue, right. Or 80-to-1. Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks for the questions. We appreciate that. We've got some questions coming up here about soils and soil testing. And here's where our email address, radio@agphd.com, is really nice. This one comes in from Joe. He said, "Hey, guys, we're in upstate New York. We've got a 250-acre muck farm. They were growing potatoes and onions up here until the late 90s, but now it's been in a corn and soybean rotation. I got a lot of questions here. I got soil tests for you, and just kind of curious your thoughts and how you'd manage fertility on this farm." Hey, thanks, Joe, for sending in your test. We'll get to those coming up right after this. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio.
If you look close enough, you can see the hidden potential within your fields. That's why an agro-liquid nutrition plan starts with the crop and identifies the precise combination of primary nutrients while focusing on the support of secondary and micronutrients. So every nutrient is working in harmony for your crop to reach its full potential, maximizing growth while offering lower use rates. Apply less, expect more? Precisely. Find an agro-liquid dealer at agroliquid.com.
Farming comes with trade-offs. An extra pass means dinner in the cab. An early morning becomes a late night. Unnecessary restrictions turn into headaches. But when you make Enlist herbicides the foundation of your herbicide program, the trade-offs will be in your favor. Effective weed control that's ready to work when you are. Flexible tank mix options and neighbor-friendly applications. All without the need to jump through hoops. See what you'll gain with America's most trusted herbicide system protecting your Enlist E3 soybean fields at Enlist.com.
Here at Ag PhD, we're always looking for ways to support the next generation in the ag industry. That's why at our free Ag PhD Scouting and Scholarships event on Saturday, June 29th, we're giving away more than 100 college scholarships. Join us as we head into the field for hands-on sessions covering everything from how to pull soil and tissue samples, ways to improve crop health, the importance of microbiology in farming, and much more. Plus, in our comprehensive guide to crop scouting, we'll explore both above and below ground in a variety of crops as we diagnose problems with insects, weeds, diseases, and anything else we may find. As we're giving away tens of thousands of dollars in scholarships to eligible attendees, this day is geared more towards students and young farmers, but anyone with a desire to learn more about agronomy is more than welcome. So whether you're a college student or just want good agronomy information, this is one event you won't want to miss. Come to the Ag PhD Scouting and Scholarships Day, Saturday, June 29th on the Hefty Farm near Baltic, South Dakota. Learn more and register at agphd.com.
Save plenty of green on select John Deere compact utility tractors during the Go Green Save Green event at C&B. Payments start as low as $253 per month. Visit DeereEquipment.com. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Some restrictions apply. See dealer for details.
Get more durability for less downtime with Soil Warrior Strip Tillage from Environmental Tillage Systems. Improve fertilizer efficiency and reduce passes and fuel usage. Now that's ROI. Learn more about ETS at SoilWarrior.com.
My mom's got a new Case IH tractor, and it can do it all. Bale hay all day. See in the dark with its powerful LED lights. Hook up all the implements. Shift like a race car. Steer with ease. And it can also cool my juice box. Yeah, her Case IH tractor can do everything she needs it to.
Looking for a tractor that can do it all? Check out CaseIH.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. Our phone lines are open at 844-44-AG-PHD, and you can always email us radio@agphd.com, which is what Joe did from upstate New York. So, guys, I got one field that's sandy and it's rented. The rest of the fields are a muck soil. I took some Malic 3 tests in January of 23, and I'm sending them in for your review. We generally broadcast spread and lightly incorporate fertilizer before corn use, and we also utilize a dry 2x2 starter for both corn and beans. And then we drop tube the remaining nitrogen for corn later on, averaging 170 bushel corn, 45 bushel beans. Just kind of curious, what would you do on this soil or on these soils to improve things?
Okay, first of all, I don't understand some of the numbers here. So this isn't Midwest Labs. I don't know even what lab it is. Yes, I understand a Malik 3 test, but just as an example. Now, it's possible they used a hydrometer to truly measure what cation exchange capacity is. But for example, I got one test where they're saying you have a 69 cation exchange capacity, and I show you have about an 8. That's a dramatic difference. So I don't know exactly what to tell you with some of those numbers, but I will just say this. The first things we're always looking at are soil pH. And if your pH is high, which I see a fair amount of, it's because you have a lot of calcium out there. It's not that high though. And I don't quite understand some of their stuff. They're telling you have 96% calcium. I don't see that. You only have, in some cases, 1,500 parts per million, 2,000 parts per million of calcium. To me, it's actually not that bad. And so anyway, I guess I'll tell you what I think just based on, let's say that your parts per million readings are true and your base saturation is off because they figure it different than we do. So if I just look at your parts per million, and I'm going to focus first on N, P, and K, well, obviously, you always need nitrogen, especially in a lot of this because it's lighter soil. So you have to spoon feed things like nitrogen, sulfur, and boron. So that should be a given. Okay, phosphorus and potassium. With your phosphorus numbers, it's all over the board. So we've got some that are real low, but we actually have quite a few that are over 100 parts per million on a Malik 3 test. So I feel pretty good about that. But, you know, if you've got stuff that's down to 50 or whatever, you just have to keep building that, and then you're in pretty good shape. Beyond that, with potassium, also all over the board. I got some that's 100 parts per million, and let's see, here's one where I got 83, 66, 80, 68. We got to get that up, all right? We want to have that being 2% base saturation K, and yeah, the way they figure base saturation, it's not going to work out the way we do. But we want that potassium number typically 200, 300, if in a heavy soil, 400 parts per million, something like that. Okay, beyond that, after we talk about N, P, and K, then I already brought up sulfur. You've got some that's, you have pretty high sulfur levels. So that makes me question how good is your drainage out there, or how are you putting on so much sulfur? Because you got hundreds of parts per million on sulfur in some areas. So in other words, you don't need to be adding sulfur, but I would question, do we have any drainage issue or anything like that? Zinc actually looks pretty good. Now granted, these guys, this lab, may be running tests a lot different than labs we're familiar with, because they're saying you have zinc levels 20, 30, 40, 50 parts per million. First thing that I'm going to do is I'm going to take a couple of these same spots. I'm going to send it to Midwest Labs and then send it to us. So then I can compare. And so send me your current report. Just send a couple tests in. It doesn't cost much. It's like $13 or $15 to run a Malik 3 at Midwest. And I'm not saying you have to use that lab, but use another lab so we have something to compare to, because these numbers are just, it's off the charts on zinc, and I never see that. Almost never see that. All right. So beyond that, I guess I don't know that I have a whole lot of suggestions for you at the moment, because we also see really high levels with copper and some of these other micros that we just don't normally see. So I'd like a couple samples sent to Midwest. Let's just see how they're showing stuff in relation to how this lab is showing stuff. Because, yeah, I mean, the main things I see that if these numbers are all right, and let's say Midwest and some of the other labs we work with would have the same numbers that this lab does, I'd go, you know, I'm just going to focus on potassium, potassium, potassium. And after that, you got some spots that need some phosphorus.
All right. Thanks for the questions. Get this one from Mike down in Southern California. He said, hey guys, we've got 2.5 acres that were taken over that hasn't been planted or taken care of for 50 years. Currently, I'm dealing with puncture vine, or devil's thorns, bull thorns, goat heads, weeds, lots of different names for this. Just curious, I was going to go out and spray Roundup. Do you think that will work? I'm just kind of curious what I think. I've listened to your radio show and hoping I could get some directions on this. Yeah, Roundup's great on puncture vine. If it's warm, you talk about mixing some surfactant in with it, that's totally fine too. Yeah, Roundup will work great. Just use a strong rate. Other options you'd have is 2,4-D and dicamba. They're both good too if you use a strong rate. But the big thing is those seeds, or those big thorny seeds, I guess, they stick around for a while. So do your best to kind of clean those up too. I don't know if that's totally possible, but wipe this weed out, and then, yeah, you're going to have some more that keep sprouting as those seeds germinate. If you have a way to get rid of those. I heard one thing online, somebody was talking about, they took a pumpkin and they rolled through the patch and had it stick in the sides of a pumpkin, and then they just threw the pumpkin away. Then they didn't have to touch them with their hands. They are really sharp. They can puncture tires. So be careful working around puncture vine. Thanks for the question, Michael. We appreciate that. I had a question here from Tom. He said, I've got sticker grass. I'm down in South Central Kansas. I'm just curious what works to control it. I was recommended a combination of 2,4-D and dicamba. Yeah, there are a lot of different names for that particular weed, burr weed, spur weed, lots of different ones there. And yeah, 2,4-D and dicamba are the products to use. It's got to be warm out, so they're actively growing. So for guys to do that as early as March, probably not going to work. But if you're doing it now in April or into May, it'll work really well. So I would do that. Just kill those weeds before they set seeds so your problems are over. All right, got this one in from Troy down in Kentucky. He said, I've got a residential property and I wanted to spray some Freelex out there. What temperature does it need to be for Freelex to work? Do you think that it's safe to spray around trees, evergreen shrubs and bushes, even rose bushes? Just an FYI, over the years here, I've applied 3 tons of ag lime now over the last 3 years, and the pH of the soil appears to be pretty good because the lawn keeps getting better and better.
Okay, so Troy, our suggestion is we like to see the daytime highs at least in the 70s, nighttime lows at least in the 50s or higher. That's where you get the best results, and we would like the temps in that kind of range a couple days before, the day of, and a couple days after. So we want good growing conditions, and we want your weeds to be actively growing, so they have to have moisture and things like that. Then you get the best kill, the quickest kill. As far as will it hurt neighboring plants, typically, no. The main thing you're worried about, it's not volatility anymore like it is with old 2,4-D. You're just worried about physical drift. So in other words, if the wind is blowing that direction, then yeah, you can't spray. If the wind is blowing away from those plants, you're in good shape. So just pick your timing. It might have to be, unfortunately, on multiple days. But as long as you do that, you should be in pretty good shape.
All right, thanks for the question. Get this one in from Mike. He said, can you guys talk to me about P and K, how they're mobile in the soil, how susceptible they are to runoff? I heard that phosphate or that potash only moves 1/8 of an inch a year. I thought P was also very immobile, but I've heard it's susceptible to runoff. Can you just clarify the mobility of these nutrients?
Okay, phosphorus is the one that is very, it doesn't move. Okay, so that just sticks around even in a lighter soil. Potassium in a light soil actually can move a fair amount. It's not going to leach like nitrate or anything like that, but in a real light soil with lots of rain, potassium can move somewhat easily. Phosphorus is pretty well stuck unless you get to super high levels. If you're talking hundreds of parts per million, then phosphorus can move down. Now, this runoff thing, what happens is, since phosphorus doesn't move, let's say it's in the top inch of soil, if you have soil erosion, well, guess what? Now the phosphorus goes along with the soil. And yes, phosphorus is the number one freshwater water quality issue we have in the United States. So do everything you can to prevent erosion, and then you stop the movement of phosphorus into water for the most part.
Thanks for listening to today's program. Be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio.